Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We've got the first half of this hour for you. Open lines. Would love to hear from you. A lot that went on over the weekend. Would love to hear your thoughts on any topic. You can just give us a shout at 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Let's go to Danny in Slidell. Danny, you're up. What say you?
Newell, I want to talk about the property taxes in St. Tammany, and it didn't have to happen. They took away the casino away from us. They took away the video poker away from us. And it took away the betting on the phone. All this would have went. Look at Jefferson Parish with all three. The millions they got coming in, they're going to lay it on us. It's like he who laughs last laughs the loudest. And these people are getting it put to them because they didn't want those three things.
Danny, how much of an increase, may I ask, was the valuation on your property for property tax purposes?
That's where I'm laughing. I'm locked in. My neighbor across the street, almost 600. The one on side of me, 500. Countless others. He told me about one had 900. All this could have been avoided. But yet the good citizens got together to support their own businesses and thumb this thing down. I'm locked in.
Yep. And, you know, so what happens is, you know, with this reappraisal year, your property in St. Tammany is getting reappraised. We've had the tax assessor on to explain a lot of what was happening with the increased valuations, and those were going to occur, and that's what you're seeing, right?
Exactly. I listened to what the man said, but all this could have been avoided. Every time they build a new subdivision, they got to manage, street it, police it, fire it. Where do you think that money's coming from? They need to raise the taxes. Mr. Cooper needs more money. But why did they turn down those three ventures that Jefferson Parish is making millions off of?
Yeah, it was a very heated conversation. There was a couple of developments here recently that neighbors fought, you know, relatively small apartment complexes, would bring in more tax dollars, didn't want it. And, you know, there's a delicate balance that you try to create, because without new business, without new taxpayers, what you as the homeowner are going to take on more and more and more of a share of it, as each day goes by. And that's the reality. And Danny, you can sit back, right? Because you're locked in under the law. So yours doesn't go up. And everybody else's is going up. And more people reach your status, Danny, that means the others are going to end up paying even exponentially more, right?
Exactly. Newell, I got one other thing and I'll let you go.
Yes, sir.
I admire everything you say. But if you're going to, if this is me hearing you talk this morning on the Biden administration about the war in Israel. Newell, if you're going to say something bad, what's your solution to it? You follow what I'm saying here? If you're going to criticize, what should they do?
Well, I don't think they're going to. I don't think they're going to reach a two-state solution. I think that's a pipe dream. I think I will be long gone, and we'll still be talking about a two-state solution. How do you get there when one of the parties does not want that? You're going to ram it down their throat? I mean, the fact of the matter is that Israel has to be let to do what they have to do, plain and simple. They continue to get bombed. They set up a defense system. They got comfortable. They got lazy. The Iron Dome. And once you move to a defensive posture like that, everyone else is trying to take advantage of you. They have to chart the course of what their future is going to be. And the Palestinians are going to have to pay the price for electing terrorist groups to be their leaders, to run their government and everything else. And unless and until they're willing to get off this river to the sea mentality and kill Jews, they are going to continue to suffer the consequences of their ideology. It's their ideology that's doing them under. No one talks about a modification of their ideology. They really believe that historically they have a right to this land. And if anyone studies history, you'll find simply just to the contrary, it's not true. So they have a false premise. So how do you deal with that? You know, you can't. So, our position is we're going to go punish the Israelis. What? Okay. We're going to punish them because they got their act together. And they're going to be willing to go to the mat in defending their right to be there. And then we want to try and stand in between and mediate this with a party who doesn't want they don't want this problem to go away. No one would ever talk about Hamas, Hezbollah, Fatah, or any of these terrorist organizations ever again if everyone just let the Israelis do what they got to do. They would be completely and totally minimized. The only success that these groups have ever had is to get the rest of the Western world to engage in anti-Semitism. Plain and simple. And that's where we find ourselves today. Kids protesting on campuses that don't even know the history of the region. They can't name the river and they can't name the sea. And they're out there disrupting people's lives day in and day out as though they're some self-professed expert in this field and they know nothing. It is just a whack-a-mole game and they need to be called out. And we have university leaders, and just bear with me, Danny, at Columbia right now. So the previous leader there, Manish Shafiq, got removed, right? Well, they put a new person in there. The interim president is Katrina Armstrong. She actually apologizes to the students to the harm caused by police sweeps to clear the unruly and illegal encampments that went on her campus. She does an interview with the Columbia Daily Spectator, a student newspaper, and she says, just to let everybody know who was hurt by that, I am just incredibly sorry. I know this is tricky for me to say, but I do understand that I sit in this job, right? And so if you could just let everybody know who was hurt by that I'm just incredibly sorry. I know it wasn't me, but I'm really sorry. I saw it, and I'm really sorry. Really? What about the men and women of the NYPD that got called out there on multiple occasions and had to place their lives at risk dealing with these knuckleheads? They were compelled to work overtime in order to be able to respond to that, and instead of maybe spending good, valuable time with their family, no sorry to these people, right? And what I said, and people are always asking for a solution. You want to know what my solution is here? Don't go.
Right.
When Columbia calls out next time, tell them you're on your own. It's private property. You handle it. We're not coming. So if they burn your place down or whatever it is that they're going to do, that you have embraced these folks. In fact, one of the leaders, believe this or not, they hired as a teacher this semester. One of the leaders who was the spokesperson for all of this crap that went on Columbia, is now a professor teaching a course at Columbia University. You cannot make this stuff up. And all they want is for taxpayers. Thank you, Danny. But all they want is for taxpayers like you and I and others to keep footing this silly bill for these folks so they can continue to play their silly-ass little games on their silly-ass little campuses, trying to get everybody to believe that they are the cat's meow. Columbia University, one of the most prestigious universities in the country. It's a third-world country, Columbia University is. And these people are crazy. They're crazy. And meanwhile, taxpayers are doling dollars out to create comfort levels for this idiocracy that's going on that campus. I could tell you right now, if I was head of NYPD and that call came in, you're on your own. We're not risking our lives. We're not doing all of this. For you to turn around and apologize to the students for being disruptive, apologizing to the students for destroying your property, commandeering one of your buildings, getting in the face of Israeli students, engaging in anti-Semitic behavior. Where's the apology to the men and women that I represent if I was the chief? I'm waiting on that apology. I don't see it. I don't hear it. Crickets. Riddle me that one. And unless and until that happens, just block our number from your phone. Don't call us. We're not coming out. Y'all handle it. Because obviously, this is what you want to perpetuate. You want to perpetuate unlawfulness on your campus. You want to perpetuate discrimination. You desire to perpetuate anti-Semitic behavior. Your desires are not in line with the moral compass of the people that live in New York City. So you're on your own. We'll be right back.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Neil, how you doing?
This Monday doesn't feel like last Monday. Let me start there. 15-12, we go down. I don't know about you, but I just felt like we never got momentum. You know, it was like we were it was in arm's reach, but we could never grab it.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm a little bummed out. You know, it's always the double whammy when, you know, the Eagles beat the Saints, because obviously we as Saints fans are sad, but then you also know Eagles fans somewhere are also happy, which kind of is like, just that hurts too, just to know that. It was a rough game. And, you know, the second Eric McCoy went down in the third play of the game, and I could have told you right then and there, this is not going to be a fun game to watch once he goes out. If I had, you know, there's probably three players on a team that I would rank in this order in terms of the damage it does when you lose them. The number one is the quarterback, because he's the quarterback, obviously. Number two is your Mike linebacker, because he's the quarterback of the defense. And number three would be your center, because he's the quarterback of the offensive line. And you look at how that game went. You couldn't run the ball. There were protection issues. It was sloppy. It just seemed like people didn't always know what they were doing. There was a couple timeouts you had to burn because, you know, one time you didn't line up correctly. Another time two guys went in motion, and it's just didn't look right. And of all the teams to have to deal with that against, you know, I would say the Eagles probably have a top eight interior defensive line with those guys, those Georgia kids. So, you know, it's hard to put the blame on anyone in particular. You want to say, hey, I wish Derek Carr handled things a little bit better, but he had people breathing down his neck all day long. You can't run the ball. You can't set up the play action. And that's really been the key to these first 2 weeks has been, hey, we were able to successfully run the ball, set up the play action, hit deep shots. You know, you threw the ball to Shaheed five times, zero connections. You know, you'd like one of those deep balls to hit. I thought that they handled things as well as you probably could in terms of, hey, you had a chance to drive down the field and score a go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter. You did that. You gave your defense a chance to close things out in the 2 minute. You got them in 3rd and 16, and then boom, two guys run into each other. It's just a terrible, terrible busted play. Dallas Goedert's running by himself forever. 2-1, not the end of the world, but it feels a lot like last year where you went into week three feeling like you had a chance to really, really set yourself up at 3-0 and in control of the division and in the NFC. And instead you have this really deflating loss and injury that you're not sure how it's going to impact the rest of the season. And you're going and facing a divisional opponent in a game you really feel like you have to win. So not great, so, but, you know, you could be worse.
We're still uncertain as to the extent of the injuries for Eric.
Yeah, it was a hamstring issue, which I suppose is better than a knee, which I initially thought he probably might be dealing with something knee related. And those are always tough. But at the same time, a groin injury. I think I might have said hamstring. It's a groin injury for a guy who has to, you know, get down to the stance and snap the ball 50, 60 times a game. That's tough too. So we'll find out more today. Dennis Allen's going to talk a little after 1 o'clock. He might have some kind of update. I imagine he'll be vague because he doesn't want to give the Falcons any tips as to whether Eric might be out there or not. He's going to force them to wait until the injury report, I imagine. But it's hard to see a scenario where he's not at least a question mark going into week four, and you're going to have to see if you can figure something out. Cause I think that was the issue in that game more than anything else is you can't just replace your center and expect everything to go smoothly. You know, you kind of need a week of prep to at least get ready. So I'm hoping that if you have to be without Eric, things look a little better. And I think the question you have to ask now is, okay, are you better off with Lucas or maybe shifting Cesar Ruiz in the center, a position he's played for you before, and keeping Lucas at a spot that I think he's been more effective at left guard? Because I think that was the other issue. Was Landon Young was hurt. Oli Udo was your backup left guard, and I don't think he had a particularly good day. So, you know, would you be better off trying to figure something out at right guard? I think these are all questions they're going to have to answer today, tomorrow, Wednesday. But it's definitely – I don't think you can go into week four feeling like, oh, we'll definitely have Eric out there, because it did not look good for him coming off the field.
Yeah, you could – it felt that way. And I hadn't looked at all of the stats, Jeff, and I was just kind of curious. It didn't seem to me that the Eagles were blitzing a lot either. They were just one-on-one kind of beating us at the line.
They blitzed a decent bit. Zach Bond got off the edge a few times. I thought Zach had a really good day getting upfield and making tackles. They attacked him in coverage a couple times. But, no, I mean, the pressure was primarily in the interior. And if you'd asked me going in what's kind of the kryptonite for a quarterback like Derek Carr, especially even as good as he's played, you get interior pressure on a quarterback that's not particularly mobile. Things go downhill quickly. I mean, look at I want to say it was 2020, the game where the Saints went into Tampa Bay against Tom Brady and beat him 38-3. That's what happened in that game. David Onyemata and those guys were able to get interior pressure and blow up the pocket from the inside. And when you're talking about a quarterback that's not Jalen Hurts or like a Lamar Jackson, that makes things really difficult because you just don't have time to allow anything to get created, and you can't run the play action because you can't get the run going. And that was the biggest issue, is Jalen Carter was just getting clean pressure all game. And, you know, the amazing stat from that game is Derek Carr only got sacked one time, which I think kind of gives you an idea of how, you know, he was getting the ball out. He was doing his best, but they were, you weren't allowing much time for anything to develop. You know, there were a couple balls batted down at the line where you were trying to set up a screen and you just didn't have enough time to do it. It just was ugly from the start. And, you know, you got to give the defense a lot of credit, even though you had those two big plays. They did hang in there. Nick Sirianni did his absolute best to keep as many Eagles points off the board as possible. And so, it felt at some point in that game like he was kind of a Saints sleeper agent. That 60-yard field goal made no sense. But, you know, at the end he just didn't have enough. And that's a frustrating way to lose, no doubt about it.
Interestingly, two of Derek's best completions, he literally threw off his back foot, falling back. And, I mean, like 15 to 20 yards down the field over the middle, right? But it was rare that he was standing on 2 feet, you know, just with your natural follow-through and throwing the ball, which we grew accustomed to seeing in the Dallas game quite a bit. Didn't see that yesterday.
Yeah, that was the most jarring thing, and that's why when you look at that game, it's tough to point to anything and say, well, they did this badly, they did this badly. They couldn't protect. They couldn't pass protect. And Derek's always been a guy that if you give him time in the pocket, he can make some really good things happen. If you force him to try to get the ball out early, you know, he's going to try to make a play. That's what happened on that final play of the game, really. He just had pressure in his face. You know, maybe the best option is to just go down and take a sack and live to play another down, but you're really in a tight window there. You got about 40 seconds left, one timeout. You're on second down. It would have been third and something. So he's just trying to make something happen downfield, and he can't do it. But, you know, I thought Chris Olave, all things considered, had a really, really strong game. He had 6 catches, 86 yards. That touchdown, he left T.J. Gardner-Johnson in the dust. When you have no time to process, you have no, like, you can't talk about, hey, was this the right play call? We don't know, because a lot of the plays that they called, he never had a chance to run them. I feel like they, you know, Clint maybe got a little ahead of himself in the sense of like, hey, we can't do this, we can't do this, we can't do this. So you didn't try. You know, I didn't understand why there was no Jamal Williams in a game where you're trying to get hard yards. He had 1 carry for -1 yards. You know, the 3rd and 4th down calls after the blocked punt, I know a lot of people will complain and say, hey, you shouldn't go for 4th down there. You should kick a field goal. I disagree. I think it was the right call to go on 4th down. My complaint is the play calling and the decisions you made in that scenario, where why is Jamal Williams here if he's not a guy that you say, hey, we got 2 downs to get 1 yard, right? What is he here for if it's not that? I thought Taysom Hill being out really impacted some of those decision-making opportunities. The direct snap to Alvin Kamara on that 3rd down at the end of the 3rd quarter ahead of the 4th down call, that feels like a play that you have in the game plan for Taysom Hill, and instead it's Alvin Kamara. And here's the thing, when it's Taysom Hill, there's always that threat to throw the ball, so it kind of opens things up a little bit. And when it's Alvin, you don't really have to worry about that. And these guys who have already been getting pushed in the run game all day from the defensive side, all they have to do is pin their ears back and get upfield and go tackle the running back. So, I don't know, I felt like the play calling felt – it was the first time that I felt Clint Kubiak didn't necessarily put his best foot forward from a play calling perspective, and maybe that's a learning opportunity for him. Other teams are trying to figure out what you want to do, and I think the Eagles had a good bit of success of taking that run game away, so how can the Saints kind of self-scout and get back to that? Hopefully they can get Taysom Hill back, and that can help open things up. But, no, nothing worked. It was a day where nothing worked, and you almost pulled it out. I don't think you're going to be looking at this tape and feeling good about a lot of what you see.
You know, it was interesting, something that you said earlier, and it was emblematic in the manner in which they had to use their timeouts in the second half, because they couldn't get the play in. The play clock was running, and Derek ends up having to call timeout twice. In that last drive, where he threw the interception. Had you had three timeouts as instead of one, you know as well as I, the play selection would have been much different, right?
You imagine, but you know, they only got one play off, and that's, you know, you'd like to see Derek find a way to extend that drive. I honestly don't know. I think we would be a lot more, I would be a lot more critical of that interception if they did have multiple timeouts.
But I can't
say for certain that he wouldn't have done the same thing if he had gotten the same pressure. Maybe your play calling is a little different. Maybe you're able to run the ball. You only need a field goal, so maybe you run a draw and maybe try to pick up yards that way. You can get a little more creative. The Eagles probably have to be a little bit more careful with what they're calling because they know you can use the entire field. But, yeah, anytime, whenever you burn those timeouts early in the second half, you know it's probably going to come back to bite you in a close game. And it's particularly frustrating when it's just a situation where it's due to sloppiness. Like, it's not – you're not trying to gain an advantage. You know, one play, two guys went in motion, and honestly, it should have been a penalty. It should have been a legal procedure penalty, and instead the refs kind of let it go, and Derek was able to get a timeout prior to the penalty. So I think that was just the same situation of, hey, we're going to call a timeout to avoid a delay of game. You had to burn a timeout to save yourself 5 yards. And, you know, I don't know how much of that is a product of not having Eric out there, how much of that is a product of not having Taysom, guys being a little disjointed in general, but we hadn't seen that over the first 2 weeks, and it's frustrating to see it happen at home in an environment where that's supposed to be an advantage for you. So, you know, hopefully they can clean that up going into Atlanta, where it will objectively not be a friendly environment up against those guys, particularly.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. They're 1-2. I'm not sure that accurately reflects the quality of the team, because they have played some really competitive football, right?
Yeah, I mean, they could also be 0-3 if the Eagles can hold on to a lead. I mean, it's funny because the way their Monday night game went against the Eagles is almost identical to the way the Saints' game went against the Eagles, except the opposite, where the Saints were the team that had the go-ahead touchdown, and then it got erased immediately, and they had a chance to go kick a field goal, and you know, they couldn't get it done. They threw an interception, and last week that was Jalen Hurts doing that against the Falcons. But no, it's hard to get a gauge on what the Falcons are doing and how good they are. I think Kirk Cousins, he's a good quarterback. He can't move, you know, and so if you're able to affect him in the pocket at all, you're able to control that game. And so if I'm the Saints, I'm thinking, hey, how can I generate pressure this week? And we'll see. You know, I'm not sold on that Falcons team right now. I think they have a lot of question marks. I think they have a solid defense. I think they can cover. Jesse Bates and Justin Simmons is a really good, really talented safety tandem. They're going to be able to take the ball away if you give them opportunities. But I think the Saints should be able to dominate from the defensive side of the ball. And I mean, here's the thing. We're just sitting here talking about how negative things feel. You were able to hold the Eagles to 0 points through three quarters. I mean, it's, you know, we sit there and talk, okay, you know, all week it was like, hey, Saquon Barkley is the closest thing to a home run threat you have at the running back position. And that was the story, right? He broke up one long run. He had a strong game, but I mean, that 65-yard run is what it really was. And you know, you asked them to cover, you know, too many times, and it bit you. But I do think we've seen a really strong Saints defense. If you only allow 15 points, you should win that game. So hopefully the Saints can pass protect better. Hopefully the defense continues to get out there and pressures the quarterback, and you can do what you couldn't do last year, which was bounce back from that Week 3 loss. Last year, it turned into another loss, and it just kind of spiraled from there. They need to make sure they avoid that. And that's what I asked Rashid Shaheed about after the game. Is like, does that experience help you? And he said he thinks it does, right? He thinks this group is resilient, and hopefully they can use that experience last year of kind of allowing it to spiral and not allow that to happen this year. But we'll have to wait and see.
And we had a lot of near catches, too. I mean, Rashid had one in his hands that the defender at the very last moment was able to punch out. I think the same with Olave, which would have – those two catches would have been difference makers in the game. One, probably a touchdown, right?
Well, they were actually both to Rashid. Chris, actually, he was targeted six times. He caught all six. Yeah, they were both deep balls to Rashid downfield. There was one in the first half. and one in the second half. And yeah, if one of those goes your way, then this is a different game. And the Saints are sitting there leading probably 10-0, and the Eagles are haven't been able to do anything all game, and you can be a little bit more aggressive on defense. But yeah, I mean, those are the type of plays that went for you in the first 2 weeks that just didn't. Darius Slay is very good. He made a couple really nice plays on the ball. I think I asked Rashid, and he said he felt like he should have had both of them. And I think that's probably, when you look at Rashid and you say, where does he need to continue to improve? It's in that contested catch environment. Like, we've seen him make all of these huge plays. Primarily they've been, I just ran past the guy and the quarterback found me. We haven't seen him go up and make those kind of back shoulder end zone grabs where he has to go up over a guy. And whereas that's where I think we've seen Chris really develop. He made a couple really nice grabs in traffic in that game.
Yeah.
But those are kind of the 50-50 balls where, yeah, I mean, they're calling 50-50 for a reason, right? You know, sometimes they go your way, sometimes they don't. And that's what can swing a game. And, you know, when you have cover corners who can make plays on the ball and they make plays on the ball, that changes things. But I think Rashid also is disappointed. And, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's also a testament to Derek Carr, because he was in both of those plays, one for certain. And I won't put my memory up against yours, but I know one for certain it was a contested throw. I mean, it was somebody right in his face, and he just, like, put it right on. I mean, it was the only spot where our receiver could get both hands on the ball, which is good, too. So he's capable of sitting there in that pocket with folks hanging on him and still being able to throw that ball like that.
No, and I mean, you look at the stats and you'll say, man, Derek really didn't have a great game. 14-25, 142, a touchdown, interception, 69.1 passer rating. But when you go back and you watch the tape and you watch the pressure he was under basically all game, I think you'll gain a better appreciation for the fact that the Saints were able to move the ball at all. And, the other guy who had a good game that we probably won't talk about a lot is Matt Haball. I thought the rookie punter who really hasn't been asked to do anything, he had some really nice kicks in this game that set up the Saints' defense in good situations. They did basically everything else right that they needed to win that game other than protect the quarterback. They blocked a punt. You know, they covered well on kicks. They got off the field on fourth down. They got an interception in the end zone, Tyrann Mathieu. And, you know, they did every single thing you could have done to win that game other than move the ball on offense. And it's why it sounds so similar to the game in Green Bay, because I would say the same thing about that game.
Yeah, no doubt. Jeff Nowak, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time and your insight. Off to Atlanta this week. And then to Kansas City for a big Monday night game. It doesn't get any easier, does it?
Nope, but I'm excited for it. I think they're going to bounce back. Thanks for having me, man.
All right, man. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. So, folks, tomorrow we're going to be broadcasting live from the East Jefferson YMCA, celebrating Senior Day, and Primary Care Plus is recognizing Healthy Aging Month to promote ways that people can stay healthy as they age. We were out there last year, had a great time. We'll have a great lineup for everyone. Primary Care Plus, your doctors for life, and it's going to be at 6691 Riverside Drive, which is the East Jefferson YMCA, and we'll have a lot of great guests, and we'll have a really good time. So come out and see us if you're out that way. Riverside Drive is right off of Power Boulevard there, behind the Rouses in that business park. Can't miss it. And we will be out there tomorrow for sure. So we were talking earlier about a number of things that are going on in California. About a number of these progressive issues, right? So Gavin Newsom vetoed an attempt, the first in the nation, actually, to have the university system, the public university system, be compelled to employ undocumented students. So he ends up vetoing that new legislation on Sunday. And in order to avoid legal and political risk as it crushes the hopes of immigrant rights activists who have suffered a string of defeats this year. Yes, they have, because you know why? They're not politically popular. You know, it's funny about how the Democrats, they talk a good game about this immigration thing, until they're backed into a corner and they recognize and they're reading the tea leaves, they lick their finger, they put their finger up in the air to see which way the wind is blowing, and they go, never mind, maybe that's not such a good idea afterwards, right? And, you know, he talked about how this is a novel legal theory. It's really more like an exotic legal theory. I mean, these are things that you've never seen before, because these same mandates are not held for us, right? You know, I mean, as citizens, you know, we'd love to have these kind of mandates that are out there, but we don't. They have them here, and you're uninvited. And they're wanting to make up for it. I don't know what guilt they're trying to overcome here. It makes absolutely no sense to me. But it continues. The Biden administration, you know, much like everybody, the Democrats are saying, well, Trump pressured them into not taking up that immigration bill. Well, officials have been telling Politico for some time now that the Biden administration had privately pressured them to not proceed with this bill at this time, because the president's reelection campaign was taking hits over the border. This was prior to him getting out of the race and Kamala Harris stepping in. They recognize this is going to be a problem. We can't afford to lose California. I don't know that they would, but there are a lot of other states that would be watching them very closely to see exactly what was going to happen. And then the legislature out there want to give non-citizens, the same, illegal aliens, wants to give them unemployment. And now he's facing Gavin Newsom continued pressure from his party to deliver these progressive priorities that are coming at him day after day after day after day. And this comes on the heels of him just vetoing another politically explosive proposal, and that was helping and providing money for illegal aliens to buy homes. Right? It's amazing. You got to wonder, what is it about this group or class of folks that is just so endearing to this progressive party, to the Democrats? I mean, we've got all these folks talking about MAGA. What about what's going on the other side, where we just give them all of this taxpayer money, they come into the country uninvited, and we just want to shower them with gifts? It's amazing. We don't do the same for citizens. It's just kind of interesting. The governor spokesperson says that he's going to evaluate this bill on its merits. There's a September 30 deadline to sign this legislation, though his finance department has actually come out in opposition of an earlier version of the bill, citing funding concerns. Newsom has repeatedly warned lawmakers to stop with the virtue signaling in an election year. Why? Because he's having to make these difficult decisions. Although he's term limited, does anyone believe that he doesn't have national aspirations? Of course he does. You know, and that's what the Republicans in California are saying, that Newsom's going to vote depending on what the national consequences are going to be of this vote relative to this measure. So the measure was, the original version would have made unemployed, undocumented workers eligible for $300 a week in cash payments. It would have been capped at 20 weeks and only applied to workers who were unemployed in 2025, and the program was going to sunset in 2027. And folks are complaining because unemployment insurance is a lifeline when disaster strikes, and over 1 million Californians are excluded from unemployment benefits simply because of their immigration status. Interesting perspective. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. The Fed cut 50 basis points. We'll find out what that ultimately means. We'll talk about the Boeing strike update, Facebook cloning scam part two, Chinese scam city in Myanmar, and more about the economy as well. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Newell on WWL.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.